The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hoag, your host. Glad to have you with us on this glorious Monday morning here in the city. It's just great out there as you listen. Even if you're outside, as you listen to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. Glad to have you with us. Some exciting things to talk about today. The theater and music scene is getting into full swings. There, at least a week ago, there were things opening all over town. I mean, it was hard to pick what to do, what to do interviews about. Things were opening at the same time. It's getting a little easier, not as many things opening this week, but it's getting well into the season. And so there's lots of choices for you out there to pick from to see many things here in the area. We're going to talk about two of those things during the course of the program today. First, we're going to talk with our friends over at the Kansas City Ballet, where Giselle is opening this Friday the 13th. Not going to make any jokes. This Friday the 13th at the Kauffman Center. And with us once again, she's been here several times already. Haven't run her off yet. At least she's not afraid to come. Ramona Panza-Grau, she is the music director for the Kansas City Ballet. And she conducts the Kansas City Symphony Orchestra when they play for the ballet. She was quoted as being one of the, by Robert Joffrey, Ramona, one of the best ballet pianists in the world.
He's a lovely man. He's very wonderful of him to say that.
Yeah, he must have really liked your work.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, I bet so. But Ramona's been around in many places, the Tulsa Ballet, Tulsa Symphony, Boston Ballet, the faculty of the Aspen Snow. I didn't write this very bad. The Aspen Snowmass Music Festival, 5 international ballet competitions, and I assume you're one of the adjudicators for that?
I'm actually the music director and conductor for the competition.
Yeah, for all of that, and as well as taught at the Boston Conservatory, and I could go on with things like that. But I might make her mad at me. But it's great to have you here once again.
Lovely to be here, Michael.
Always, it's always great to talk to the conductor because they seem to know everything that's going on.
Well, at least musically, yes.
Musically. So you have to deal with all the artists. It's the 57th season of the Kansas City Ballet, and they are presenting the well-known ballet Giselle. A show that has, shall I say, supernatural subplots to it.
It does. It does. That's why it was created. It was that time, 1841, when everybody was interested in the supernatural and the occult, and Giselle just fit the bill. In fact, Act Two of Giselle has these supernatural creatures who are women who have been betrayed before their wedding day, and they supposedly rise from the dead wearing their wedding gowns and dance men to death.
I like this already.
Yeah, and these people are called willies. And so,
hence the term, it gives me the willies.
That's exactly right. Oh. Can you believe it originated from a ballet? You Give Me the Willies comes from that.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, that's interesting. See, all the things you learned from listening to this program. Yep, so that's where that term came from. But it has, I looked at some of the past reviews of past shows for Giselle. People talked about the supernatural qualities it. How intrigued the audience would be and how the audience really seemed to get into the shows.
Oh, they did. You know, in 1841, it was an immediate huge success to the point that women were going to the hair salon to get the Giselle hairstyle, which was the chignon that the women all wear in second act. So it transcended the arts. It went into fashion and it still is popular today in the ballet world because of its place in history as the first true full-length ballet, the first ballet that women were dancing on point. Point shoes were a rather new innovation at that point, and at that point,
and I was polite.
And so Giselle is wonderful. The score is beautiful. It's romantic. It has everything from happy peasants to really evil women. So a little bit of something for everyone in this ballet.
Today they'd make the evil women the heroes.
That's true.
Yeah, people have a lot of fun with that. Well, that was originally written. Do they have anything specific in mind? Do you know?
Well, it was there. was a story by Heinrich Heine that talked about these willies that so intrigued the ballet master for the Paris Opera at the time that he wanted to create a new ballet. So he was so enthusiastic that he had the composer, Adolf Adam, he had himself, and he had a set designer all on board within a week to flesh out the entire ballet, and it was performed in a month. I mean, that's how quickly they put it all together because of his enthusiasm for the story. And, of course, he was right. Here we are 150 years later talking about Giselle.
Well,
and
sure.
It's long-lasting story in that it hits all the high points of life, like retribution or redemption, true love. All of those things are echoed in the story of Giselle.
That's right. It opens this Friday, the 13th of March, at the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts. Choreography by Devin Carney.
Yes, Devin has danced all of the lead roles in Giselle over the course of his career. And so he's had many different versions that he's danced in. Of course, they're all derivative from the original. But people will say, well, maybe I'll put this step here instead mm-hmm. of this one. But they all follow pretty much the same sort of pattern. There are some that are better than others. I have to say, Devin's version, based on the original choreography, is beautifully danceable. It tells the story beautifully. It's truly a treat to have this version, and I'm very excited for Kansas City audiences to see it. We've really restored some of the cuts that were in the version that you may have seen 4 or 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. So it's a very, very complete, very wonderful telling of the story.
Is it very unusual for someone to make changes in something that is so long-standing?
You know, it's pretty traditional for people who have danced in different versions to then create one of their own with all their favorite bits and pieces. Swan Lake, for example, you'll see different versions all over. Opera, you see people do Marriage of Figaro set in 1950 instead of when it was. And that's a pretty drastic change, mm-hmm. but those kind of things happen all the time in the arts. I mean, if we all did the same thing the same way all the time, we'd only need one recording of Beethoven 9, and we'd only need one company performing Giselle. So this way you get to see his artistic take on the story, and it's truly quite wonderful.
Sure. Well, even in the opera, for instance, it wouldn't change the songs at all.
Exactly, and it doesn't in Giselle either. The music is all restored. There are no cuts. The dancers all dance the original steps plus a few more. You can ask them. It is a challenge, and it is beautifully done. The dancers have been working incredibly hard. And we have everything on stage from, you know, dead zombie women to to a pair of beautiful Irish wolfhounds that enter the stage when the court enters in first act.
Yeah, about what period of time, people are going to want to know, does this take place?
Well, Act One is happy peasants who have come in from harvesting their grape harvest with the court of, who must be their rulers who enter into the village scene in Act One. So mid-1800s, I would say.
Mid-1800s, yeah. Interesting time, a more agrarian society.
True. And one of the reasons Giselle at the time was rather scandalous was that we have Albrecht, who is a prince who is masquerading as a peasant, who Giselle falls in love with in Act One. Obviously, he is found out when the court enters and Giselle sees that he's actually engaged to the Duchess, Bathilde. In this particular instance, you make the nobility look like a peasant and the peasant look like nobility.
Oh, very clever.
So in early 1800s in France, what was going on? The revolution was gearing up. The royalty was starting to be thrown out. And so it was very popular in that regard, too, just as in historical aside.
Yeah, even politics, even though it plays a minor role, is involved.
Yeah, it is. It's very subtle. But if you connotate it with the times, then you realize, oh, this was probably a bit scandalous.
I guess that was meant to I guess you could look at it two ways. Was it above the heads of the royalty? Did they not realize this? Did they not care? Was this purely to entertain the average people?
Yeah, I would say B. They probably just didn't care.
No, I didn't care. Yeah, I suppose when you're in that position, you don't.
Yeah,
yeah. I doubt that any heads rolled because of this.
No, not from this. I mean, it was so popular that the people in Russia who came to Paris and saw performances of Giselle, then took it back to Russia, and of course made their changes in it, added some music, which we, by the way, are performing. It's a wonderful peasant pas de deux in Act 1 that is very difficult, and it's in our version, because it's one that Devin also danced when he was dancing. So lovely to have it. But they changed it and massaged it a little bit to fit the Russian culture, too. So it spread like wildfire.
When you make a decision like that, does Devin, as the artistic director, decide? I guess he has to confer with you and what are we going to do? Are we going to do some from this version, some from another? Because you don't have to do all of one particular version, do you?
No, we don't. And the basic thing for me is to make sure that I have musical scores that match his vision. I have the right number of repeats, and everything is in the order that he prefers it. Because there are two or three different orders. Giselle has a beautiful solo in Act 1. It could be before she meets the royalty, or maybe she dances a solo for the royalty. It makes sense in both places. So you have to go ahead and spend a lot of time with the orchestral scores, making sure they all match. But he came here to Kansas City already having performed this version. He had set it on Cincinnati Ballet. So I had something to go by with that. Next season, when we perform his version of Swan Lake, we will be making some of those decisions, which I'm very much looking forward to, because Swan Lake is very exciting.
I bet so.
Yeah.
And interesting. So we're speaking with Ramona Panzagrau. She's the music director of the Kansas City Ballet. She's the one that conducts the Kansas City Symphony Orchestra. You see her down front. Mostly you see the back of her head. She has nice red hair. And when you see the show down at the ballet, they have 1, 2, 3. At least I have 6 performances down here.
That's correct. Yeah.
Opens Friday the 13th at 7:30. Performances continue on Saturday the 14th at 7:30. Sunday the 15th at 2:00 p.m. That is an afternoon matinee performance. And then again next weekend as well. Friday the 20th, 7:30. Saturday the 21st, 7:30. Closes on Sunday the 22nd with another afternoon 2:00 matinee at the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts. The number to call for more information is either the ballet's number or the Kauffman Center number. It's probably the ballet's
number. It's the ballet's box office number, yes.
816-931-8993. And I checked it all out. You can also get tickets online at kcballet.org. We're speaking with Ramona. The ballet is in its 57th season. Next will be the 58th.
Yes.
Yes, you mentioned that they were doing Swan Lake. Anything
yes,
else you want to drop on us here?
Oh, next season's incredibly exciting for us. We're starting with Three Musketeers, which is a wonderful swashbuckling story. It's the tale you all know, music by Verdi that's been reorchestrated. And so wonderful family entertainment in next October. Then we're opening a unbelievably exciting, brand new, never before seen Nutcracker.
Ah, that's right.
Yes.
You talked about that last December when you were here
with
Devin.
That's right. Our sets and costumes are just stunning. It's very exciting to see them go from drawing to being built, as is what is happening now. And it'll still be the same music, of course, music of Tchaikovsky. But again, Devin's take on Nutcracker, and it's going to be stunning. You have to come see it.
Yeah, I wanted to correct the misunderstanding. I know one of the local media publications heard that announcement, took it the wrong way, and they actually wrote down that the Nutcracker would be ending in the December of 2014.
Oh, no.
So the next Monday I was on the air, I said, no, that's not correct. as Devin explained to me personally on the air, they're returning the old way of doing it.
Yes.
They're now doing a brand new version. But the Nutcracker is not going away. They wouldn't do that.
No, people love the Nutcracker. Yeah. It's a tradition here in Kansas City.
And you'd miss your uncle coming to visit every year.
I would. You remember my story.
Of course I remember good stories like that. That's the key to doing good interviews. To
well, after Nutcracker, stories. Then, of course, we have the Swan Lake where I was talking about.
Yes.
Which a full core. And one of the most exciting moments in ballet is when all of those swans enter the stage. I still get goosebumps. So,
I'll bet so.
So wonderful. And then in the spring, we have a fantastic mixed bill of pieces, including, for the first time, The Rite of Spring. So, yeah, and it's all four pieces on that program are just stunningly wonderful. So next season is very exciting for me musically, as well as for everyone just see the ballet.
A challenge, too, I would imagine.
Yes, yeah, it's things, a very big
things
season.
That haven't been done for a while here.
Correct.
You may have done it in other cities, I
correct,
suppose.
Yeah. Well, Swan Lake's never been done here. Rite of Spring as a ballet has never been done here. So a lot of firsts. No one here has seen Three Musketeers. And it's toured the world as a very popular version. So I think families will love that.
Especially fun for the young man in the audience. And probably for the actors on stage.
Oh, very fun. You know, you give a ballet dancer a sword and they're just happy campers.
Well, I bet they have a lot of it. And that's probably more work, learning the choreography so
that's
you don't
right.
hurt yourself or
that's
others.
Right.
But
a lot of light, very slow working with swords. So in the heat of the moment, you don't impale your friend.
I'll bet. Well, if I can backtrack for just a second.
Sure.
You mentioned doing Swan Lake. How did the opera people feel about the movie Black Swan, which incorporated, without giving away the plot of the movie, that Swan Lake was danced within the movie, and it had a rather dark plot.
It did. It was danced very strangely, actually, in the movie. They were trying to make a point, and I think they went a little far.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can become so involved in your art form that you do lose contact with reality. There are many people that have had that happen, whether it be rock stars or, you know, our opera stars or ballet people. It can happen. But that went a little far. And Swan Lake is really a beautiful ballet, not to be afraid of. The Black Swan in Swan Lake is pretty much only in one act. The rest of the time, it's all the white swans.
Sure.
So, yeah, it's a little odd.
So we're speaking with Ramona Panzergas. She knows. She is the music director of the Kansas City Ballet, worked in many other places as well. The costuming for a show like this,
mm-hmm.
I imagine that takes a lot of preparation.
It does. You know, you can have two choices with costumes and sets, and that is you can make and build your own, or you can rent. And what's nice is sometimes companies make and build their own, but then allow them to be rented. So you get the best of both worlds, very expensive sets and costumes on your stage, and you didn't have to buy them and make them, and it costs a fortune. We have beautiful sets and costumes for Giselle coming up that is a rental, but they were made in Russia, and they're beautifully done. The peasant scene, the vintage harvest, you really get a feel of a village in the forest, and the costumes and things for the peasants are really beautiful. Act two, which is a white act, which, like Swan Lake, has an act where all the women are in white, and Giselle was actually the first ballet to start that tradition, is also beautiful. It's a midnight in a glade at the edge of a cemetery where Giselle is pulled from her rest by the evil queen of the Willies, Myrta. And Giselle then, as Albrecht enters in grief to lay flowers on her grave, he is entrapped by these willies, and Giselle rescues him and saves him. And it's beautiful, moody, gorgeous music. It's quite a different feel from Act One. So there's a little bit of something for everyone. And the ladies' beautiful white tulle costumes in Act Two make them look like they could just fly off if you just blew a little bit on them. So it's really
point.
Wonderfully lovely. Yeah.
A good sales point, Ramona. Yeah. Yeah, it sounds like a wonderful piece.
It is. It's one of my, after 30-plus years in ballet, I never tire of Giselle. I love coming back to revisit it. The music is so beautiful. It expresses so well the story and the plot. Again, the first time that it ever happened in ballets before Giselle, the music was usually a compilation of different pieces, and a lot of times it had contemporary tunes that people were singing. Of course, no one sang them in the ballet, but people would have that connotation of, oh, that's what it's about because that's what the song is about. This was the first time someone wrote a full-length ballet in its entirety with themes for each character that return. So it's very cohesive and very beautiful. And Adolph Adam, who wrote the music, was very much ahead of his time. In fact, Adolph Adam is, we know, one of his works today that people may not realize. The Christmas song, O Holy Night, is Adolph Adam. Oh. Same man. So his stuff even carried over to today.
Sneak that on your next trivia night. There you as go. Well as the Willie comment that Ramona made.
Yeah,
people have misconceptions, I know, about the ballet. And this goes for the opera, too. Mm-hmm. But in the ballet, they say, well, will I be able to follow the storyline with people dancing? And, of course, the answer is yes, because they act while they're dancing. It's an interesting combination.
Absolutely. And Giselle, the role of Giselle, is considered one of the most difficult in the cant for a ballerina, because not only does she have to dance wonderfully, but she also has to portray everything from the happy peasant girl Giselle to this love-lost ethereal creature in Act Two. We also, just for your pleasure, put in the program the entire synopsis. Uh-huh. So if you read that, you absolutely will not get lost. But even without that, the story plays out very clear what happens on stage.
Okay, yeah, the supernatural qualities of Giselle opening this Friday night, the 13th of March at 7:30 p.m. at the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts. Was it a big change for the company to move from the Lyric building to the Kauffman Center?
I can't tell you. It's like we're on a different planet.
No.
It is so wonderful to be in the Kauffman Center. We have a stage that's large enough to fit sets and costumes for a full-length production of different story ballets. We couldn't do that before at the Lyric. So because we can make these bigger ballets available to Kansas City, we also have dancers who are more interested in coming here to stay with us because we have wonderful repertory for them to dance. I mean, as you become a dancer and you grow up, you dream of doing things like dancing in Swan Lake, dancing in Giselle, and we can do that here in Kansas City. So our dancers are truly wonderful that we have on stage. I also have an orchestra pit that's very comfortable, and so it's much nicer for all of us to be down there playing for the ballet. And of course, as always, the Kansas City Symphony is in the pit for us. Always wonderful to have them. Always beautifully played music, and a pleasure to see and hear when you go to the ballet.
I would imagine it's the job is made much easier with professional musicians of such high caliber.
It is, and we have such little rehearsal time. They have to be excellent musicians to be able to pick up what we need to do. And I have two orchestra rehearsals before I have dancers, and then we're in the theater on stage. So my first rehearsal with them is tomorrow morning.
Wow.
Very excited, as always. I can't wait to see how everything sounds. And, it's always very exciting.
Have most of those musicians probably played Giselle before?
I think a lot of them played it the last time we did it, but it will feel quite a bit differently because, like I said, things are in a bit of different order. There's more music than we used the last time.
Mm-hmm.
So, we still have to revisit it, even if they've played it before.
Oh, sure. Just a little brush up, even for professionals.
Well, different dancers have different tempos, and so I also have to hit things two or three different times and say, oh, it could end this way, or it could end this way, or watch me here because it could be this speed or that speed. So, there's a lot of variables.
Well, that's important for the dancer, I would guess.
Yeah.
It's such a big stage and so many different dancers on stage.
Mm-hmm.
Do you... You're looking at the orchestra most of the time, so you probably don't really see the dancing. I was going to ask if they take cues off of you or you from them.
It's the chicken or the egg syndrome. It depends. In rehearsal, since I play everything on the piano when we're in the rehearsal studio that's performed with orchestra, I get the feeling of what a dancer needs. I get their tempo, their phrasing, the shapes of things that they need. So we sort of plan a few places out as to who goes first. Otherwise, we're both waiting for each other, and there's a big hole. So most of the beginnings of variations and things, I'm watching them. In the middle of sections that are continuous, if they need to, they're watching me. So as I tell the orchestra, when I have our two rehearsals alone, they have my undivided attention. But once the dancers get on stage, I'm watching the stage.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'll bet so. Yeah. I've never noticed any gaps, as you say.
Yeah, that's
so.
Because we have a plan.
It seems like there's always music being played from some instrument, if not
yes.
the whole orchestra.
Yes, exactly. But, you know, you just never know. They have to start maybe up in the air, and then my music starts when they hit the floor. They have to go first. The other way around, if I have to start the orchestra before they start, then they're watching me.
Yeah. Well, it all begins on Friday evening, the 13th at 7:30. The music, the dance, the excitement, the paranormal tendencies of Giselle opening this Friday at 7:30 p.m. at the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts. Think in terms of two consecutive weekends, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Then the next weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 7:30 p.m. on FriSat, as they used to say in vaudeville, and 2 o'clock p.m. on Sun. You know, in vaudeville, if you didn't do well on Thurs, you didn't get the FriSat
That's
Sun.
That's true.
But you will have all six performances. The number to call for more information to pick what you'd like to see is 816-931-8993, or go online to kcballet.org. I want to thank my guest, Ramona Panzagrau, the music director of the Kansas City Ballet. She conducts the Kansas City Symphony when they play. You note the back of her head. She has nice red hair. You can see it from way up. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Michael.
We're going to take a break. Then when we return, another show to take, a children's show, a children's version of Alice in Wonderland being performed by the Blue Springs City Theater. When we return, you're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM.
Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Freeze Frame, KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic fare at your local theaters. The comic drama The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel, which focused on British retirees in India, was a surprise smash hit back in 2012. While it was made for under $10 million, it grossed over $160 million at the worldwide box office. That can only mean one thing, the second best exotic Marigold Hotel. Dame Judi Dench and Dame Maggie Smith return, and they're joined by young buck Richard Gere, playing folks who occupy a rooming house for the elderly and beautiful in Jaipur. The script is strictly stale non-bread, but the capable cast helps turn it into some spicy curry. While it's all very soapy and silly, the underserved 50 and over demographic may enjoy this sweet-natured return visit to the land of Seven Rivers. While it's still too early in the year to make any proclamations, it's likely that the new tone-deaf Vince Vaughn comedy Unfinished Business will make it onto a lot of worst movie of the year lists. The talented cast will want to forget all about this awful and distasteful failure about three American businessmen who see everything go wrong when they try to nail down a big deal in Berlin. I wouldn't be surprised if Tom Wilkinson, Dave Franco, Sienna Miller, James Marsden, and Nick Frost left this fiasco off of their resumes. The humor is crude, the laughs are forced, and the sentiment is phony. Unaccomplished Business might have been a more appropriate title. Also opening this week, Chappie is a sci-fi thriller about a police robot who becomes self-aware and then works to overcome an oppressive futuristic regime. It's written and directed by the team behind the dystopian hits District 9 and Elysium. Diplomacy is a French World War II drama about the backroom efforts to save Paris from Nazi destruction. Well, that's it for this edition of Freeze Frame. Until next time, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI-FM. Freeze Frame!
This is Maria Vasquez-Boyd, host and producer of ArtSpeak Radio, inviting you to tune in to ArtSpeak Radio at our new time, Wednesday at noon to 1 p.m. That's right, from noon to 1 p.m. on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Hi, I'm Susan Moon, author of This Is Getting Old, Zen Thoughts on Aging with Humor and Dignity. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about my experience of the pluses and minuses of aging.
New Dimensions airs at 5 a.m. on Tuesdays.
Egyptian journalist Leila Das started under a glass ceiling at Egyptian State Radio and eventually joined United Nations Radio just as it was being born. The pressures from within the UN on its media are highly revealing, and you can hear about it on The Next Wings, Saturday afternoon at 2:30. The Canadian tar sands is the largest industrial project on Earth, and the potential environmental consequences have brought together citizens from across borders to fight its rippling effects. On the next Making Contact, the first of a two-part special on the growing resistance to the tar sands. Fighting Goliath on Making Contact, Thursday afternoon at 12:30.
And welcome back to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. Glorious day outside. Interesting things to talk about here inside. Always enjoy talking with Ramona about the ballet. Always very exciting, very intriguing. They make good art down there. Allows to say it any better than that. But they do as well as they can out at Blue Springs. The Blue Springs City Theater has been around for, how many years ago now, Michelle?
27.
27 years. Yeah, about as long as I've been doing this program. And we've had them on many times during that time as well. Michelle Brown, the director, is with us. They are presenting their children's show. And it's called Alice in Wonderland. It's the book by Lewis Carroll, and it has several incarnations. And she has brought along three of the members of her cast with her. Who all is here that we're going to talk with today, Michelle?
We have Joshua Felton, who is our caterpillar.
Okay.
Sarah Felton, who is the cook for the Duchess. And she's our favorite plate thrower.
Oh, okay. Well, that would be fun, right?
And Piper Brown, who is our Mad Hatter.
Okay. I've talked to Piper before, haven't I?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you're the Mad Hatter. Is that a fun role for you?
Yeah.
Okay. When you talk about Alice in Wonderland, of course, it was the book. And you hear people discussing what they really mean by that. What do you tell your actors?
Well, we were lucky to find a script that's very, very close to the book. And so we tell them to just be the character. Joshua has interpreted his caterpillar as since he's sitting around smoking a hookah, that he must be a stoner. And so,
so you
he channels a little bit
the,
of that.
So you do
not
get
in
into
real
the
life.
Eater meeting.
Yeah.
So I didn't know if it being a children's show, you'd get into what some of that might be. But Josh, are you sophisticated enough to where you see what he might actually have been joking around about as he wrote the story?
Yeah, it's kind of tricky because I actually kind of took the movie version, one that the Johnny Depp version.
Oh, and, well, there you go.
Yeah,
Why did I even ask?
The Disney version, and I kind of tried to create my own character combining those two, and I kind of added my own little twist to it, and it's kind of tricky because I've
Well, sure.
Josh was new to our stage.
This has been a stretch
for his first show.
Ever performed anywhere else before? No?
Not really.
But that's quite a sophisticated actor's approach of carving the character like that. Are you a fan of Johnny Depp?
Oh, yeah. I love Johnny Depp.
He does that with his characters.
Even
with his pirate character,
yeah.
I see little nuances in there. I mean, people, I don't know what you think. I'm a lot older than you, of course, but I look at him playing that pirate character, and I see Keith Richards. I don't know if that's what he really had in mind, but that's what I see.
He actually based Jack Sparrow on Keith Richards.
Yeah, and in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, I see a lot of Michael Jackson in that portrayal there.
Yeah.
Did you pick up on that when you decided how you would do your caterpillar?
Actually, I took more of the character from just the movie version for the caterpillar. But Piper, I told Piper about she needs to be more like Jack Sparrow. Instead of the Mad Hatter from the movie, she needs to be Jack Sparrow. Yeah.
Well, I should ask the director now. Do you mind them modeling these characters in that way?
No, it has added a little bit of depth that I wasn't necessarily expecting. We have 38 kids in the show, and 18 of them have never been on stage before. So it's been interesting to see how everybody's kind of taken their role and kind of done their own thing, but then they've all managed to blend them together and really come up with a great show.
Yeah. So you don't mind them doing that? You don't necessarily encourage it, I suppose. But
Because it's Alice in Wonderland, we were encouraging, be big, be big.
Yeah, yeah. Well, tell me, for those who don't know, who haven't read the book, and it was read to us when I was in grade school, the story was read to us, not with all the nuances, but the basic story was read to us. So a lot of people of my era are familiar with the story, but some may not be. So a little captioning of Alice in Wonderland, the basic storyline.
Sure. Alice falls down a rabbit hole, and she has to travel across a Wonderland, which is a chessboard, and she has to travel across 8 squares, and she meets a different character in each square in order to become queen so that she can go back home.
Yeah. Sounds you know, kind of like one of the electronic games in some ways.
Yeah.
Or could be played that way. Yeah.
Actually, I think they've already made an Alice in Wonderland game. That was kind of revolver.
See, now, if I had had these ideas long before, I'd be a wealthy man. Okay. Sarah Felton plays a role as well.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Tell us more about these plate throwing.
It's actually really fun. Kind of difficult to keep track of where you're supposed to throw them, but I finally got it now.
What kind of plates do they have for you? Not something that shatters, I would think.
It's little plastic plates to with washers on them to weigh them down. And the stagehands, the crew, actually love it.
Are these plates that can be put back together?
Yes, and she throws them at the stage crew, I think, when they're standing off in the wings. The script said we were supposed to use Frisbees.
These plastic plates are close enough.
Yeah, but we found something that's a little bit better.
Yeah. Tell me the motivations between your character. Why does she go all off and throwing plates? What's the motivation behind her?
It's Wonderland, so the characters are crazy.
But there must be a reason for doing this. What is the reason?
I think it's to annoy Alice.
Okay.
You all are analyzing so well. I thought perhaps there was a motivated, deep-seated reasoning there. No?
Well, at one point, Alice says, I can possibly throw the plates because it might hurt the baby's nose, and then I purposely drop her own right in front of her just to annoy her.
I see.
And the crew actually go behind stage just to see that smirk I do.
Yeah. Sounds, Michelle, like you've created quite a lot of fun going
yes.
on there. This, of course, is only for stage purposes. You don't encourage plate throwing off stage.
No.
No, of course not.
Maybe not.
What about Piper? Tell us about your character. And pull the mic up close to you.
I'm the Mad Hatter.
Okay. Now, you have one of the key roles in the show. Tell us about the Mad Hatter. How does the, for those who don't know, how does the Mad Hatter fit into the story?
He is the owner of one of the squares, and Alice comes in and joins his tea party while he is sitting at tea.
Yeah, now you will hear the joke. Comedians make the joke all the time. Oh, she was as mad as the Mad Hatter. Why is that?
Because he's crazy.
Is there a purpose to this craziness?
Well, personally, I think it's because in a part of the script, it says that Father Time stopped his clock at 4 o'clock.
Uh-huh.
So it was always tea time. And I think it was just the constantly like being at tea or something like that.
Too much caffeine.
Too much tea.
a good reasoning. Yeah. A good following of the reasoning track, I think, on there. No, go ahead. Talk to the mic when you talk.
Part of it is because to make hats, they put mercury all over them, which makes the hatters all loopy and crazy. So that could be part of her character, too.
Yeah. Now, is there a purpose to all the hats, Michelle?
Well, the Hatter only has really one hat. I think that back in the day when Lewis, because this is the 150th anniversary, actually, of when the book was published,
uh-huh.
which is one of the reasons we picked this script. But I think that Lewis Carroll was, in his own way, really making a lot of social commentary.
Oh, yes.
And I think that as our society has changed, I think that we've kind of lost track of what some of that original commentary was, and we've put more commentary on it now that's more relevant to us.
Mm. And sometimes people find things, and I wonder sometimes if they're not finding more things than were really meant to be there. But they do come up with quite a bit. Now, this is what Carol meant in this package, and I wonder sometimes if that was really the case.
And the Mad Hatter is paired up with the Mad March Hare,
and all the craziness.
Yeah, all the craziness in one scene. And then there's a Dormouse, and I'm not real sure how well-known Dormice were 150 years ago and why he picked that particular animal. But there's a lot of characters in the show that sort of mirror each other. So the Mad Hatter and the March Hare mirror each other, and the Dormouse and the Mouse, who's in an earlier scene, they mirror each other. And then, of course, Tweedledee and Tweedledum really mirror each other a lot. Yeah, as in their twins.
No, a grade school teacher I had many, many moons ago, she explained to us that, in her opinion, the characters were based on actual people in Alice's life and how they affected her life, and it was kind of a play on things like that. What do you think of that analysis? It's just like being back in school, isn't it, Michelle?
I'm not sure I'm going to pass this test. No, probably, because the cook and the Duchess would have been somebody that probably a young aristocratic girl would have encountered. The crazy tea Duchess is also kind of crazy and talks, and in that scene they actually touch a little bit on child abuse, which I understand was rampant back 150 years ago.
She just said that the books were all, not just this book, but the string, it was a series of books, of course. They were all kind of like that. And that was his way of saying things that he probably couldn't have said 150 years ago, at least publicly, but snuck them into the storyline along the way, which would make it a lot of fun. We're speaking with Michelle Brown, the director and president of the board, actually, of the Blue Springs City Theater. They are producing their children's show, and as I remember, they do one a year, Alice in Wonderland. Also, Joshua Felton is also with us. Sarah Felton, I assume they're related.
Yes.
And Piper Brown is with us as well, three of the members of the cast. It's a large cast, though, isn't it, Michelle?
Yes, we have 38 kids. The youngest one is 4. The oldest one is 18.
Yeah, is it? Is directing all of those at once a daunting but fun task for you?
Actually, this time it hasn't been daunting at all. They have all been amazing. Even the little tiny ones listen. They follow directions. Sometimes working with 4-year-olds can be a little unpredictable. But by and large, they've done a really good job.
Yeah, and you need a lot of help as well, especially in the costuming and other departments.
Yes. Kara Taylor is our costumer, and she is amazing. She can, if I just tell her, here's what I need, and she just makes it happen. It's amazing.
Okay, now this is be the second weekend coming up.
Yes.
So you've already had one weekend under your belts, and Friday, this Friday, the 13th at 7:30, begins your second weekend. Mm-hmm. There'll be a show Friday at 7:30. Saturday, there'll be two shows. At least that's what the schedule I have is.
That's
Saturday
right.
Afternoon at 2 o'clock, and then Saturday evening at 7:30. Then you close out with an afternoon matinee on Sunday the 15th at the Blue Springs City Theater. It's actually part of the campus of Blue Springs High School, and it's at 2000 Northwest Ashton Drive in Blue Springs. The number to call, by the way, for more information, 816-228-0137. Or online, you can get your tickets as well at bluespringscitytheater.com. Speaking with Michelle and some of her cast, and had to have a lot of help. I mentioned the sets are probably, were probably a challenge for this.
Yeah, we have 14 scenes in the show that take place in 11 different places. So we have some moving around that we do of some different pieces. But again, we were blessed with a set crew that said, okay, tell us what you need. We told them, and they made it. And it's amazing. Just amazing what they accomplished with some burlap and wire and hot glue guns and paint.
Well, theater is the imagination anyway. You need good performers to make this real and come alive. We heard about some of Josh's motivation there. I'd be interested to hear, for instance, of the Mad Hatters. How do you get in the mindset of of the Mad Hatter? You never know. Because you know the script. But but otherwise, if you had to do impromptu of the Mad Hatter, so how would you approach that?
I don't really know how I do it. It's just, like, the inner craziness.
Yeah, the inner you channel the Mad Hatter.
Yes.
That's a good way to put it. Do you have a previous experience at Blue Springs or other theaters or school?
I've been doing theater shows at BSUT since I was like 3 or 4.
Wow. So you've probably done a lot of shows there.
Yeah.
What have we seen you in the past? Just name a few.
I was in Annie.
Ah.
Jungle Book. Lost and Foundling.
Rented Christmas.
Yeah.
Scrooge the Musical.
Wow. See, the director knows your credits better than you do.
Yeah.
Is this by far your hardest role, the Mad Hatter?
Yeah.
I would think so. A lot to do, a lot to remember, a lot of acting has to go. Or are you somewhat mad in your real life?
I'm a bit crazy in real life.
That's right. That'd be good casting then.
Yeah.
What about Sarah? What about Sarah?
I don't know. I just do random craziness.
Random craziness.
Yeah. Her mom's wishing she would cook in real life, though.
Oh, yeah. I'll bet so. Is this good preparation for later on?
No, because I'd probably break the real dishes if this is preparation.
Oh, no, you don't want to do that. No, be honest with Michael here. It's a lot of fun throwing those dishes, isn't it?
Yes.
do sometimes you throw them a little harder than you would at other times? No. Say the director has given you a hard time, yes. Do you throw those plates a little bit harder than you might usually?
I'm surprised
you even had to think about it.
Because I haven't had to give her a bad time.
Oh, okay.
But one of the things that's really funny about Sarah's part is that there's a baby in their scene.
Oh.
And Sarah sort of on her own started peppering the baby at the end of their scene. And everybody cracks up about that. And one of the moms that was at the show on Saturday said, "How did you get her to do that?" And I said, "Well, she just did it. She just understood that the cook is crazy and she just did it on her own."
The cook is crazy. I like that. I really do.
Our scene was really busy, so I was having trouble trying to fill it out, so I thought maybe peppering the baby would help. And then I started peppering Alice, too.
Well, you don't want things to go wrong on stage, but if something should and you do need to fill, it sounds like you're well prepared.
Hey, whatever goes good, soup. I don't know.
I should go back to Josh here. Anything like that?
Caterpillars go good in soup too.
You have to watch her.
That was a kick. Right.
Okay, Josh, what do you have to say to that?
I'm not sure.
The overall experience of being—did you seek out this role in Alice in Wonderland?
Yes, actually. When I went up on stage and I opened the script book during the callbacks and I saw we were doing the caterpillar scene, the first thing that popped in my head, the movie. And everyone, all the other people that were on stage with me, they didn't do that. So my sister was actually in the seats going, "Go crazy.
About the front row.
Go nuts. Get into character." And here we are.
It sounds like, Michelle, you have an enthusiastic class, at least from the ones you brought here today.
They are. They're very energetic. I was lucky with this script because there's a lot of different scenes, and so I was able to really focus in on, because a lot of the scenes only have 2 or 3 people at a time. So I was really able to focus in on working with the kids and developing character. Some kids are really easy to do that with, like Joshua.
Uh-huh.
Sarah Piper. We are fortunate that we have a little bit of leeway with the script. And so instead of in the croquet scene, instead of actually using plastic flamingos, we were able to cast 3 little 4- and 5-year-olds to be the flamingos.
Uh-huh.
And they are hysterical. They are so funny. And really every cute. Night with them is an adventure because you never quite know what's going to happen with those 3.
What has the audience reaction been during your first weekend of shows?
They have eaten them all up. They have just loved everybody. The only complaint that I've heard is that they wish they could have a couple more scenes to fill out a little bit more of the story. Because there's a couple times when it is a little, the script is a little bit choppy, and the transitions don't necessarily make sense.
Do you strictly follow the script?
We do.
Okay. So I know directly. Directors that add things. They're not supposed to. Samuel French Inc., who produces the, you probably got the rights from.
We got them from Samuel French.
Yeah, they don't like that. But some directors have been known to do that.
We have very
never Michelle.
It does say you can add characters as needed, and so we did add the flamingos. We added Joshua is accompanied by Alice and butterflies in his scene,
which are the same as the flamingos, the same little girls as the flamingos. It's awesome, and like Michelle said, they're completely unpredictable. You never know what they're going to do.
Yeah, so I see. Even I miss some of these undercurrents and things. I'm glad for you to fill me in on some. The show is Alice in Wonderland. It's a production of Blue Springs City Theater. You have one children's show a year, Michelle?
We have one children's show a year, and then we do a summer musical, which will be Oklahoma. And we do a Christmas show, which is going to be on the worst day of Christmas.
The worst day of Christmas. Okay, well, there's 12, we've learned. So that would be the worst. Now, in Oklahoma, plans are already made to do that Surrey and get it painted. And all
plans
that.
Are already underway. We're fortunate that we have Julie McDaniel coming back to direct that show. She is an incredible director, and we are so lucky.
Yeah, you probably always need new and more volunteers
for
Blue Springs City Theater.
Yes.
Yeah. So the show, Alice in Wonderland, Alice plunges down the rabbit hole and becomes involved in the madcap and deliciously satiric series of adventure based on the books by Lewis Carroll. It's the one, as Michelle pointed out, the 150th anniversary of the book written by Lewis Carroll. It reopens for its second weekend on Friday the 13th at 7:30 p.m.
Performers Bad luck day.
I know. See, you have to take that out of your mind. Actually, you opened last Friday, so the jinx is off. Yeah. So bear that in mind.
Maybe.
Well, and you know, Alice has a small black cat.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
no.
Oh, it's superstition thing.
Friday the 13th at 7:30. Performances continue then on Saturday the 14th at 2. Then Saturday in the evening as well. Two performances on Saturday, the afternoon, 2 o'clock. The evening at 7:30, and just a single performance on Sunday afternoon at 2:00 p.m. at the Blue Springs City Theater, which is actually on the campus of Blue Springs High School. That's located at 2000 Northwest Ashton Drive, Blue Springs, Missouri. The number to call for more information, 816-228-0137, or, in fact, you can even get directions on their website, bluespringscitytheater.com. I want to thank my guests for being with me, Michelle Brown, the director. How many times have you been here? It seems like quite a few.
This is, I think, my third time.
Third time. Joshua Felton, the role is the Caterpillar. Sarah Felton as the cook, and Piper Brown as the Mad Hatter. All in Alice in Wonderland. Performances continue this Friday out in Blue Springs. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having
us. Sounds like what it's like in the behind the scenes here at this radio station. Yeah. Yeah. The Jazz Insider is next. There'll be great jazz for you this afternoon. Jazz from 1 to 3. Then Lady D comes in with the blues. Blues from 3 to 6 right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. You can go to kkfi.org. You can look at some of our past shows there. They're podcast. The show really never has to end when you have podcasts. So thank you so much for listening. Till next we see you, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Hoag. We'll see you.